and immediately extend a word of welcome to the members first. I would imagine, despite the fact that in the program, there's no indication that we'll have to introduce ourselves. I would love us to do that, maybe because I am new as the chairperson. I was not part of the first meeting. So I would start by allowing members to introduce themselves, members of the portfolio committee. I'm Fikile Xhasa, a chairperson of this portfolio committee for cooperative governance and traditional affairs. Can I allow members to introduce themselves?
Good morning, Chair.
Good morning, Honorable.
I am Tsinikaya Mpumza. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks. The next morning. Member.
Morning. Honorable members and our respected guest, I am Peggy Hadebe with H, a member of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Does it mean those are the only members currently present?
Good morning, Chair.
Good morning.
I am Kanya Teza, an alternate member of the committee.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Sibuyisele Buthelezi, member of this committee.
Welcome. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. I am Dikele Didireko, a member of the committee.
Thank you. Let me assume when members want to speak, they will introduce themselves. I wanted, before I can welcome, first, in terms of my list of the delegation, they are led by the Premier, a number of MECs and HODs, but I'm welcoming all of them. But the Premier will talk to the delegation. If not the Premier, then any other MEC delegated to do so. I would now like to, first, before I allow you to speak, to indicate that this is a follow-up meeting following a meeting that was held on the 2nd of September 2020. And generally, this meeting was prompted by...
Recording in progress.
Was prompted by... the issues relating to COVID-19 expenditure that subsequently was followed by an audit report by the Auditor General and the SIU that also investigated and produced a report using our mandate as the Portfolio Committee of doing oversight on cooperative governance. We felt the need to call all the provinces, obviously together with municipalities, the two other spheres of government, following up on those investigations. And like I'm saying, this is not the first meeting. But members of this portfolio committee understand exactly what needs to be followed. And I would imagine as well that the communication was clear in terms of what needs to be reported about. And that's the reason for this meeting. Maybe before I allow the Premier, let me indicate as well that we have not had a similar approach. We have met some provinces already. And in some provinces, there was a coordinated report. But I'm informed in this instance that it would be reports as listed in the agenda, starting with the Premier, then follow. But like I'm saying, we didn't want to spend a lot of time on reports. Our duty is to conduct oversight. So as much as is possible, we'd love to spare time for members to engage. And so the allocated time there, is just a guide. So if possible, would love to reduce that. In fact, in terms of that arrangement, it means each presentation would take about 10 minutes. If possible, can be less, we'd be very happy. Can I now welcome you, Premier, and hand over to you first to allow introductions, and then immediately after that, then we'll start with the presentation. Actually, after your introduction, you would immediately start with the presentation of the office. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair of the Portfolio Committee. My greetings, sincere greetings to all members of the Portfolio Committee and to members of our Provincial Executive Council, as well as the departments and the officials who are here. Honorable Chair, it is an honor and a pleasure for us to engage with you as the government of KwaZulu-Natal, representing the provincial government. But we would want to ensure that, or to assure you, that we are always transparent and dealing with all issues of accountability. And we place a high level of importance to meetings where we have to account to the legislature, including engaging with this portfolio committee. Without wasting time, may I indicate that we're coming here with a delegation from the provincial government. I will say almost all MECs who were supposed to be here are here. We have MEC, I believe MEC for Kokta, MEC Shomuga. We have MEC for agriculture and rural development, MEC Muloyi. We have MEC for health, MEC Smelane. We have MEC Shomuka for culture. We have a treasury, MEC Dube Ngube. I'm not sure whether she's here, but I can see HOD is here. So we're all here and ready to report. We would want to confirm that we got the invitation and we will present the report. Having said that, I must also hasten to indicate that the meeting takes place at a time where the provincial government is engaged in the process of budget where MECs are required to present budget votes in the legislature. And that's why some will not be here. I think MEC Sibiya for Public Works and Human Settlement will not be here. Now, the HOD Zungu is here. He will present the report. I must also apologize. I know that MEC for Social Development is not well, and it has been reported to us, and we have the HOD who will then present the report. We are going to present almost six reports. The first is an overview report from the Premier's office. Then the second will be the report by Treasury, Provincial Treasury, which will be the overall report. Then we have a report by COCTA, report by the Department of Human Settlement, the report by the Department of Education, and the report by the Department of Social Development. I'm not sure, but I must indicate, I'm not sure whether I mentioned that MEC for Education, MEC Mshengu, is also here. So with that, Chair, we would like to welcome the opportunity to interact with you. May I then hand over to the DG, our DG, Director General, Dr. Mkize. I believe will lead the first report, which comes from the Office of the Premier. With your permission, Chair, and the members of the committee, may I request to hand over to the Director General or either anyone assigned? Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you. You can proceed.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable members, Honorable Premier, and Honorable MECs, as well as colleagues. I'm not sure whether the slides are appearing.
Yes, they do.
Okay, thank you very much. We, without getting
into Chairperson, can she put the camera on?
Oh, camera must be on. You can proceed.
Without getting in too much of a background, but it is known that we were the first to have a confirmed case of COVID-19 on the 5th of March 2020, known as the provincial government established the Provincial Command Council to monitor the coordinated response to the pandemic and ensure adequate preparedness by the province. The Provincial Executive Council, chaired by the Premier, regularly ensured oversight and timeless decision-making on the implementation of the preparedness and response plans. After the establishment of the Provincial Command Council, in line with the district development model approach of service delivery, district command councils were also established, and we also activated all war rooms at a ward level. And these structures assisted in ensuring a multi-sectoral coordination of both provincial and district level.
realizing earlier on that we had to disperse resources as part of the response plans and mitigations against the pandemic, and emergency procurement, we realized that there were risks associated with it. And then the Provincial Executive Council took precautionary measures to prevent any abuse of the funds. Preventative measures that were put in place included pre-audits and regular reporting on procurement by departments, municipalities, as well as entities. For every service associated with COVID-19, we had to regularly report to Provincial Treasury as well as the Auditor General. But Provincial Treasury assembled a team to do the pre-audits, but their presentation will expand on that. The procurement in the province largely focused on non-pharmaceutical interventions and infrastructure and resources to cope with the demand and increase in the number of cases. We also paid much attention to creating awareness and educating our people about the pandemic. The National Treasury published procurement guidelines for the procurement of COVID-19 related materials, which the Executive Council deliberated on and were also implemented in the province. There are structures that were set up, led by the Provincial Treasury, to daily monitor procurement of COVID-19 requirements by departments. A few months later, the Provincial Executive Council noted media reports related to procurement of PPE and blankets. Subsequently, the Executive Council swiftly instructed Provincial Treasury to institute an investigation. And on 21 July 2020, the outcome of the investigation was made public, and the report submitted to relevant departments for audit as well as consequence management. As the provincial government of KwaZulu-Natal, we were unwavering that any allegation of state resource looting in the name of COVID-19 will be scrutinized, investigated accordingly, with no compromise when it comes to consequence management. In the interest of more transparency and accountability, the Executive Council decided to be one of the first provinces to publish KZN COVID-19 procurement disclosure report. And it is in this report that we disclosed COVID-19 procurement by each department, municipality, and entity, as well as the prices. And this information will be elaborated on by Provincial Treasury when they are reporting. This was followed by the ownership disclosure report, which contained directors of companies and their contact details. All these were published for the public to make their own assessment, and it was a way of accounting by the KZN provincial government. The bulk of the provincial budget was largely utilized on infrastructure, as we've already indicated, upgrades, alterations, and new facilities with long-term benefits, even beyond COVID-19. Every transaction made was released on all the projects, be they in schools, hospitals, or in other facilities or amenities. As we conclude and invite the departments to account on each expenditure, we do wish to reiterate that most analysis on our expenditure will reveal that our focus on spending was on long-term infrastructure, which was intended to ensure a lasting legacy, value for money, save lives, and shield the people from the economic devastation of COVID-19. Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members.
Thank you. I think the order as outlined by the Premier must be followed.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning to all the honorable members. MEC Dube Ncube for Treasury in KZN. Chairperson, we are going to report on the COVID-19 expenditure as requested by the committee. We will not go through the introduction and some of the measures that the DG has already gone through. Indicate to the committee some of the measures that were taken by the province in order to ensure that the matters of ensuring that there are a clear instructions that were followed in terms of the various circulars that were received from National Treasury, as well as the Provincial Treasury, the guidance that Provincial Treasury gave to departments, as well as the oversight that was played by both provincial government working with the AG in supporting and assisting various provincial departments. Chairperson, I will then request the HOD to do the presentation to the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chair and honourable members. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
All right. Thank you very much, and good morning, honourable members. As the DG has touched on some of these issues, I will skip some of the matters as the MEC has indicated, but work was done, and it's from a certain point onwards from Provincial Treasury in terms of ensuring that before any awards were made, there was a pre-audit assessment, and this was really to ensure that there was compliance with the SEM process. So there were transactions totaling a value of 450 million rand. As we know, the Auditor General worked very closely with the Provincial Treasury, again, to make sure that there was coordination around the transactions that were reviewed. There were also a number of circulars that really were to guide departments in terms of how they should be procuring during this time. And there were numerous circulars coming from National Treasury as well, which required changes in terms of the reporting and certain of the processes that needed to be followed. So departments were expected to report monthly on their expenditure, which we then consolidated and submitted through to National Treasury. And just to enhance that transparency, all the awards were posted on the department's websites, which included, as the DG said, a number of details. In terms of the information we're presenting, it is still under review by National Treasury, who will be submitting a final closeout report. What we also did last year is we looked at the action plans that had been put in place by the provincial departments to determine whether they would actually address the shortcomings that were identified in the Auditor General's report. And in this current financial year, we will then go and validate whether those actions, in fact, have been implemented. In terms of the expenditure, these are the reports that were required, and National Treasury was very clear in terms of the expenditure that they wanted. Specific codes were created. So in total, the province from the beginning of March 2020 to 28 February 2022, total amount of 2.9 billion was spent, split between the public entities and the provincial government departments. We give a listing in terms of all the public entities, so the top three being Isimvelo, Sharksboard Trade and Investment, totaling the 13 million rand that was spent on COVID expenditure. In terms of the departments, health and education, social development, obviously the first two being the key spenders having the major impact in terms of COVID, and those totaled 2.9 billion rand. We then also give a detail in terms of some of the infrastructure that took place per department, which were the clinics, which were the hospitals, et cetera, that we dealt with, and this amounted to 1.2 billion rand. We also give an indication of the top 15 products that were procured and the value and the amount that was spent on that procurement. Obviously, hand sanitizers, your fabric cloth masks, infrastructure were the biggest spenders in terms of that. We've also listed the top 15 suppliers, and this was also submitted through to the media that was also released this information. So there were a total number of suppliers, were 1,181 in total, but we're just giving an indication of the top 15 and the value of the work that was awarded to them. In terms of the distribution of spend, again...
Chair, the slide is not moving.
Well, the slide is not moving.
We are still on the first slide on preventative measures.
In the video of the presenter, Chair.
What is the problem with the video?
We don't see any person who's presenting, Chairperson.
Oh, I see a small face somewhere there. I thought it's enough. No, it's fine. That's correct. I think I can see the slide is moving. If you can do something about the video.
Okay. I'll then continue, Chair, if the committee can see.
Yes,
all right. And then, Chair, we talked just about the distribution of spend, just to indicate that below the range of 500,000, 894 suppliers benefited to the value of 118 million rand. Then, obviously, we give the further categories. Above 20 million, there were 28 suppliers. And again, that just gives an indication of the spread of the opportunities that was given to these suppliers. We also then talk about demographic spend, where 44% went to African Black, up to a total of 1.3 billion rand.
The small face I am seeing is not your face. It's the face of the MEC. Can we see you?
Apologies, Chair. My camera is showing as it is available, but let me try that. Does that assist?
Yes, we can see you now, yes.
Mohammed's apologies. Good morning, everyone. All right, then we just back to that slide 12, is referring to the demographics, that in terms of the beneficiation. We also just give an indication there in terms of some of the areas not specified on CSD. We've got a code at the bottom of the table, and this is obviously linked to the information that we have on the CSD. Just in conclusion, Chair, then, obviously there were challenges experienced in the information that we received from departments. For example, orders would be cancelled, so there was a misalignment in some of the information. This is being currently reviewed by the National Treasury in terms of validating information, and we are supporting them in this regard, and they will then be submitting a comprehensive report. As we know, the CSD is real-time. As companies change the ownership structure of this information, then obviously just need to be adjusted accordingly. And as mentioned earlier, in this year's internal audit plan, we have included the fact that we need to now verify where departments say that they're taking the action, that in fact that they have done that, and that it has addressed the shortcomings identified in the Auditor General report. Thank you very much, Chair, and apologies for the technical issues.
Yes. We can move to the next.
Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Honourable MECs. Thank you for the opportunity. You're speaking to Joey Krishnan, Chief Director, Municipal Finance, and KZN Cocta. And I will be doing the presentation in respect of municipalities. Apologies for our HOD, who is caught up in another meeting and will join us shortly. Honourable Members, the presentation that we are doing covers the municipal presentations. My apologies. If I may ask that the COGTA presentation is flighted, unless you would like me to flight the presentation from my side. Chairperson, would you like me to flight the presentation from my side?
I thought they were listening to you, those who are empowered to do so. But if it doesn't happen, can you do it if you are able?
Right, I'll try and share from my side. Chairperson, are you able to see that?
Yes, yes, we can.
Thank you very much, and my apologies for the delay. Chairperson Cocta, through our coordination role and the MEC's responsibility for local government, we were required to provide guidance and advice to municipalities during the COVID pandemic. Of course, we are responding to the findings of the AGSA on the third special report on COVID-19 that was undertaken. But we will share with you some of the initiatives we had taken during the time of the pandemic, as well as an overview of our analysis now of the expenditure that was allocated by government for municipalities to respond to the pandemic, and that was in the form of the disaster relief grant. Provincial Treasury has also, as you've heard the HOD said, been monitoring departments, but they have also been monitoring municipalities. And collectively, we have as a province been performing careful oversight in this matter, bearing in mind that with the pandemic came some panic and urgency. And so there were the potential for hasty implementation, as the AG had highlighted in the report itself, and for mistakes that were made, which created some opportunities for abuse. There were three reports issued, and we're only going to respond, Chairperson and members, to the municipal report. What's important is that funding was made available via the Disaster Management Relief Grant, and of course, the MIG grant funding and the Water Services Improvement Grant in particular were actually repurposed predominantly to respond to the pandemic. And they were used specifically for the provision of water during the pandemic, knowing that that was a key element to keep our communities safe. The equitable share was also adjusted. And an additional allocation was made in 2020 to municipalities. And in KwaZulu-Natal, we received 20 billion rand, which was allocated to municipalities. This was really to maintain the level of services and to provide for the temporary decline in the revenue collection that occurred amongst municipalities. I think the committee will be aware that many businesses were found to be in distress. Even households felt the pressure of COVID-19. And so the revenue base at municipalities was further diminished. Municipalities had to also incur additional costs, such as provision of the shelters for homeless, as well as COVID-19 hospital setups, and include other areas. So that equitable share funding was provided, and guidance was provided by the National Treasury in the form of circulars, although the AG acknowledges that those circulars were not law, and that they then conducted really what was a reasonable test, reasonable man test in terms of how the funding was spent. So they covered areas of procurement and the use of PPE. They looked at the delivery of COVID-19 related infrastructure projects. So the quarantine facilities that municipalities had to provide, temporary shelters, the water infrastructure and procurement and installation of water tanks. And that was a phenomenal cost to municipalities. And then other COVID-related initiatives such as water tankering, sanitation services, and food parcel initiatives. The focus was on a fraud risk and control assessment, and 43 municipalities across the country were sampled for this particular audit, of which 5 came from KwaZulu-Natal, and these 5 municipalities were eThekwini, Ilembe District, Umkhanyakude District, Uthukela District, and Zululand District. And the municipalities were selected really on the basis of the amounts of irregular expenditure that were found and the highest spend on COVID-19. Chairperson, the next few slides covers the Auditor General's findings from the third special report, and I'm sure that the committee has had sight of the report, so I will really just very briefly flip through the query itself. But in each instance, the detailed finding has been provided together with recommendations that were made by the AGSA. So in the sample audit and in relation to eThekwini, one of the areas that one of the findings was around the issue of excessive prices paid for COVID-19 goods and services. And that's because PP items were procured at prices above national treasury market-related prices. Chairperson, without further details on that, I think we also must note that suppliers were found to have increased their pricing of goods and services, even increasing bread prices at the time. And so municipalities in their state of haste may not have explored the market sufficiently to be able to respond. Nevertheless, this finding was made, and following therefrom, municipalities were alerted to this to make sure that value for money was achieved. Then the provision of good, poor quality COVID-19 infrastructure-related services. So the AG looked at the facilities that were being used as shelters and so on, and found that they were not in the best condition. And I think that is sad, unfortunately, because it is our communities that had to endure that hardship. The next finding in respect of eThekwini was the inadequate provision of water and sanitation facilities provided by municipalities to the shelters. And again, you know, you're moving into halls that are not ideally set up to have people living in them. And so provision needed to be made for facilities, you know, almost as if they were domestic facilities, toilets, water, washing up areas, et cetera. And that could have been done better in a more ergonomic manner and more efficiently. The goods and services procured from management preferred service providers. Of course, in many municipalities, particularly in smaller areas, but in this case, it is eThekwini, so it's not likely that that may have happened. But for expediency, sometimes we would go to certain service providers that have been preferred, and the AG and the deviation process was applied in these instances. The AG would have then considered those in the context of the SEM regulations and requirements for compliance purposes as well. At Ilembe District, personal protective equipment was procured, and this was in excess of the municipality's needs. Whether it was to stock up, like most people were doing on food items and other items, one is not clear, but clearly there was excess purchase. And in conversation with municipalities, obviously those that excess was then applied subsequently in years towards staff, as well as visitors that entered storage facilities and other municipal facilities. Water tanks were installed, were not properly secured. Again, it speaks to the hastiness of the decisions and the actions relating to the COVID-19 pandemic and the urgency that was required, and we were not perfect in that particular area. At Zululand District, the same issue emerged, as did at Ilembe, that PPE items were procured in excess of the municipality's needs. There were delays at Umkhanyakude District in the completion due to inadequate contract management of contractors for facilities, shelters, and water infrastructure projects. And we are aware that Umkhanyakude District was in crisis at that time as well. There were insufficient management, there was instability in administrative leadership, and of course all of those items impact on our ability to respond to our communities and more so to respond to incidents that happen that have such a huge impact. Also, Umkhanyakude District paid for supply and water projects without any proof of delivery distribution. And specific incidents were cited, specific payments were cited. These were then followed up in the subsequent audit of the AG to address the issue of the paper trail and the irregular expenditure element thereof. In respect of the findings of the AG and the recommendations that were made, I think generally our MEC and our department have noted and accepted the findings of the AG in the third special report on COVID-19 expenditure, particularly in relation to the five municipalities that formed part of the sample audit. In respect of the reports relating to the expenditure on the equitable share allocation, I think we noted that it was an unconditional allocation because it was part of the equitable share itself. And the AGSA confirmed that the circular did not constitute legislation standards for compliance and for the audit in particular. But the municipalities were required to report, and in the case of municipalities, it was actually a weekly report to the National Treasury, which we then processed as COGTA. And we then also reported on the basis of media responses that were received, on the basis of numerous queries that were raised. We did report, make a specific report to the provincial legislature on the COVID-19 expenditure. And we highlighted the additional allocation to the equitable share, which municipalities primarily applied for the sanitation services and others, which we will highlight. Our equitable share in 2020-21 increased from 14.6 billion to 16.8 billion rand as part of the relief package for COVID-19. And much of those additional funds was used for pre-basic services to cover the loss of income. For example, the electricity use consumption went down at Umshatuze District. Water consumption went down because industries closed. So you will appreciate that, especially in our largest cities, there was a significant revenue impact. The report that we submitted also included the areas that the expenditure items And in this regard, there was general other expenses. There was provision for the homeless in particular. There was health. So you would find that municipalities were procuring kits. They were procuring tankering of water. They were feeding the homeless and doing food distribution. Metro police services were increased because our enforcement of the times at which people were not allowed to be out increase. And so the curfew meant that we needed to have more visible policing. There was community and social services that were provided. Overtime, obviously the COVID-19 called on all officials, public servants to really be at the forefront of what was happening and responding to the pandemic. Protective clothing was also a large aspect. and security services. So those were the main procurement items that municipalities had spent the funds on. We also reported that the National Treasury Framework was in place, that municipalities were reporting and providing details of suppliers. We analyzed the listing of suppliers themselves, and we highlighted the top 10 suppliers at one point. It was included, as the DG had said, in the reports of the Office of the Premier, as well as the Provincial Treasury. The Auditor General was also then highlighted as going to specifically review the expenditure in the full audit of 2020-21. Our own departmental response, there was a need to communicate and communicate and communicate as much as possible, because there were so many uncertainties and there was so much happening in such a short space of time. So we had various engagements with municipalities. We set up chat groups, Teams meetings and discussions around the pandemic and key areas of water service delivery. We had regular joint operating committee meetings, and there was much happening. And I think the DG has highlighted the institutional framework that took place within the province, led by the leadership in our Provincial Executive Council. Our MEC in particular communicated with mayors, with municipalities. We talked about the reprioritization of the MIG funding. We assisted municipalities in that process to deal with the response to COVID-19. We provided guidance on the access and utilization of the municipal disaster relief grants, reiterating the purpose for it and trying to mitigate against any irregularity. And then dealt with the issue of submission of business plans and fund, for the funding. Many of the municipalities also needed guidance in terms of obtaining approvals from the National Treasury for intervention measures. And in particular, many of the financial processes were affected as well. And in consultation with the AGSA in the province, as well as with the National Treasury, you would recall that these financial process timelines, exemptions were granted by the National Minister of Finance. So the audited financial statements in the year 2020 were submitted 2 months after the statutory deadline with an exemption that was granted. We also issued a number of frameworks, guidance, investigation methodology to actually support municipalities in the prevention of UIFW in the province. And of course, we wanted to ensure that we were not found wanting in terms of our legal compliance and our accountability. The province also developed an economic reconstruction and recovery plan, which we did in consultation with municipalities. We really wanted to recalibrate, revitalize, and restructure and transform the economy of the province. Given the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic, we wanted to facilitate the access of the relief measures by business itself, part of the local economic development program. We wanted to reduce the risk of transmission of the coronavirus pandemic amongst workers themselves, devising a process of managing the unintended socioeconomic risks and consequences of the pandemic, and formulating an actionable plan, both with short, medium, and long-term goals to address the response to the pandemic. We also analyzed the COVID-19 expenditure, and we submitted a report to the provincial legislature in August 2020, and it was based on the timing and the lockdown. There was an impact on the availability of municipal staff. There was an impact on operations. There was an inability to prepare the financial statements in time. There were many procedures that could not be undertaken. For example, municipalities could not do the physical verification of assets, meter reading. So many billing complaints were coming through, but it's because meter reading could not happen physically. Revenue, as I indicated, was affected. Valuation rolls, there were condonations granted from and extensions granted by the MEC for valuation roll processes. And then finalizing support and documentation and completion of financial statements was also affected. You know, the general impact, I think, is known, was felt across the economy, all three spheres of government, the additional costs that needed to be incurred together with the revenue that was lost as a result of the inactivity that happened that took place at that time, the decline in billed revenue. And of course, we know that we have municipalities that are already struggling financially. So in our report to the legislature, we also further highlighted key challenges that were experienced by the municipalities. So some municipalities approved a number of their own relief programs to alleviate the burden on consumers, which led to reduced billing. So they granted relief to consumers. There were business closures that impacted on billings. There was a higher unemployment rate and loss of income of customers, which also impacted on the recoverability of debt. Some operations were curtailed because of reduced revenue, and it did definitely impact on the provision of services during that time. Credit control could not be enforced and was probably suspended due to a lack of staff and also the difficulties experienced by the communities themselves. I've highlighted the shortfall in revenue. I've highlighted the delayed payments and increased burden on consumers. Certain services like the driving license testing services and so on closed. Also, loss of revenue for municipalities. And there was a decrease in expenditure on the municipal infrastructure grant in particular because of the construction projects that were also suspended during the COVID-19 pandemic. We then analyzed a total of 46.9 million rand that municipalities spend via the Disaster Management Relief Grant. And I think it must be noted that many municipalities also utilized funding from their own reserves, as well as the reprioritization of the grants, which has not been included here. So when we analyzed the report of 1920, we found issues, and I won't read through all of them, but just highlight the third report, which highlights the PPE issues around control environments, storage practices, and amongst others. Then there were infrastructure-related issues that were highlighted, and I think those have been recorded in the presentation. And then we then went on to the analysis of the subsequent year's audit report. So because we were already into the financial year with the COVID-19 pandemic, so in the subsequent year following the special report, the AG then would have done a more comprehensive analysis and audit, compliance audit, in the last financial year, which was has concluded in February in KZN. And I think our findings here, again, the same challenges. We found a higher increase in the registration of indigents. We found delayed financial assistance coming from the National Treasury. I think the time that it takes for us as government to respond in processing the applications for disaster relief and so on can be improved. We had emergence of other service-related issues, so illegal dumping because we were not at our peak in terms of our services. Illegal dumping occurred, vandalism occurred. There was an invasion of public buildings and facilities. We also found that municipalities failed to achieve many targets as a result of the pandemic and had to adjust their performance reporting in that year. Fatigue and staff absenteeism was high, illegal connections, inability to plan and budget effectively, and inadequate funding to deal with COVID-19. Although we've made relief packages available for municipalities, I don't think we truly were in a position to have quantified the exact amount that was necessary. And we might find if we added up all the monies that were spent by the reserves and municipalities and other ad hoc items, that the cost was far higher than we are actually reporting in terms of our investment. Municipalities themselves implemented many strategies to assist their customers, suspension of credit control and debt collection policies, temporary suspension of interest on arrear accounts, payments, payment arrangements and agreements were made with clients to pay off their arrear debt in times of difficulties. Payment agreements were signed and entered into. Temporary suspension of rates collection occurred in some municipalities. And there was increased communication via municipal websites, SMS and social media to consumers to allow for this. One of the significant challenges we know is the aging infrastructure across our municipalities. And in particular, the lack of funding and lack of proper operation and maintenance thereof. And the redirecting of funding from these grants, bearing in mind we had to reprioritize the municipal infrastructure grant, the water services improvement grant, means that we have actually taken funding away from service delivery in areas where we desperately need it. Water provision is significant. So we do need to consider some of those. I'll just go to the figures in terms of the relief grants for 2020-2021. You will see that the majority of municipalities in the province that received the funding actually have spent 100% of it. This information is obtained from the audited financial statements of municipalities for the year. There are some municipalities that did not receive the funding or did not apply. And there are some where there's 0% spending in amounts where there's a small amount of between 1 and 2 million or 250,000 and 2 million rand. And those we are following through with municipalities to make sure that there is responsiveness to the grant conditions. But generally, all municipalities have spent their funding in KZN. As at April this year, Treasury also analyzed the funding based on the weekly reports that are required to be submitted. And you'll see that 84% of the funding was reflected as spent. It's similar to the amounts that were reported in the audited financial statements because the requirement for the weekly reporting was suspended by National Treasury. It was obviously quite onerous. So municipalities will now report as part of the annual reporting processes as we go forward. Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, we would like to assure you that our department has at all times during this COVID-19 pandemic engaged our municipalities. We have tried to provide guidance and advice in accordance with our support role in terms of Section 154 of the Constitution. Municipalities will have to report on the unauthorised irregular fruitless and wasteful investigations and expenditure. And as a department, we are still monitoring and supporting in that process. We have provided much assistance. We are now training new leadership on the processes as well. And we will ensure that every cent is accounted for and explained, as the Honourable Premier said in his opening remarks. Ourselves and the Provincial Treasury, we remain committed to good governance and sound financial management and accountability at all times. And we will continue through our quarterly assessments, our Section 71 reports and annual reporting to monitor and support municipalities. And our reports, respectfully, Honourable Chairperson, is submitted to the committee based on the AG's third special report. I thank you.
Thank you. Can we move to the next report? I think this last one did not respect the issue of time. So I would appeal to those that will follow. At least we should not go beyond 10 minutes. Next presenter, in terms of the order outlined by the Premier.
Thank you, Chair. This is MEC Mshengu, MEC for Education. Chair, without further ado, I will request that, with your permission, we call on Mr. Ngobo, the HOD, to do the short presentation and only focus on the corrective measures that we have put in place insofar as the findings of the AG are concerned. So he will skip some of the of the slides and then focus where there are specific findings of the HG and how we have gone about correcting or putting in place corrective measures. Mr. Ngoma?
Thank you very much, MEC, and good morning to the Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I will specifically, as the MEC has directed, go to the audit findings and the actions taken by the department to rectify the findings that were made. And that would be basically from slide five. I'll start with the AG's overall comments after undertaking the necessary audit on our procurement, particularly of PPEs during the pandemic. The department, in response to it, the department has since implemented the following control processes. A complete bid specification was distributed with the request for quotations to all prospective buyers. And on the return of the FBRs, sorry, Chair. On the return of the RFPs, the qualifying companies had to provide samples that are evaluated by a multidisciplinary technical evaluation committee to ensure compliance with the specifications. The purchase orders are only generated once the requisite processes have been completed. And as a department, we have since committed to implement, or we have implemented the following controls over the goods receiving process. The goods received is updated immediately on receipt of all stock. The department supply chain management units have been performing regular, consistent follow-ups on outstanding orders and on undelivered items, and detailed notes are maintained for record purposes. All orders have since been finalized, and all deliveries are being recorded on the goods receipt note immediately, rather than transcribing the information that was recorded on the delivery note. And those are part of our responses, to the findings of the AG. Next slide. Yeah, as a department, we will conduct an investigation into the reported findings, and should there be any losses incurred, disciplinary processes will be instituted and the loss recovered accordingly. And I must say that in this respect, we have already commenced with disciplinary processes, and in some cases we've actually finalized disciplinary processes against some of our officials. The supply chain management unit has strengthened all processes to ensure that all relevant stages of the procurement process and assessment are performed to ensure that suppliers comply relating to their tax status. This step of validating the tax status is required prior to awarding the contract. It should also be mentioned that the deficiency was identified by KZN department after the order had been issued. The process was subsequently reviewed and the supplier's tax status confirmed and validated prior to the department processing the payment. The department will now conduct an investigation into the reported findings, and should there be any losses incurred, as I've said before, the the disciplinary processes will be instituted and the losses recovered accordingly. I think we can move to the next slide. Yeah. I think you know we have already indicated what was saying there that was strengthening the supply chain management unit and on tax issues. I think we've already commented. Can we move on to the next slide? Okay, in this slide, we're looking at what the findings were and you know, and what the deficiencies were on the supply of the PPEs. One of the deficiencies we found was that in a specific district, that is Pinetown District, there were initially 26,000 masks delivered to the district. And on checking, we found that they were defective due to poor workmanship. The supplier then was called to check what had happened, and he did give reasons behind the defects. But he then duly replaced all the defective items. We were not interested really in the explanation, but we were interested much more in the replacement of the defective items, which was duly done. Officials now, in terms of recommendations, officials now in district have since been provided with the World Health Organization standards as well as the Department of Health specification to assist when checking for quality. Why the findings could not be avoided? Deliveries happened at the district in large numbers, which did not afford our district sufficient time to check each mask. And at head office acted as soon as quality concerns were raised and corrective measures were put in place. Because it has to be remembered that during that time, we were working under very stringent time frames, preparing for the reopening of schools, and some of the mishaps and mistakes happened during that time. But as soon as we discovered them, we put corrective measures immediately. Is there an investigation and outcome on this particular one? There were no investigations. Because the supplier, in fact, did replace all the defective items. Actions taken against officials, the suppliers was able to rectify the default after being notified as per the contract provisions, and all PPEs are quality checked now on delivery and signed off by our officials on delivery. And sampling tests is also done with the assistance of the Department of Health and the Department of Agriculture and Rural Development, particularly in relation to, sanitizers. Next slide. Non-compliance with National Treasury Disaster Management Instruction Notes. The department has now implemented a turnaround strategy to mitigate all possible non-compliance. The Chief Financial Officer and the SAM positions that have been filled, and there is stability within the finance, because one of our problems has been that we had too many vacancies, but we've since tried to, within our limited means, to fill some of the vacancies. the supply chain management unit failed to ensure with all the national treasury disaster management instruction notes, and action was taken immediately. This became apparent whenever we actually discovered any irregularity, we took action. A number of instruction notes were issued by the National Treasury guidance to all our SAM officials. However, SAM managers failed to enforce compliance. And what were the outcomes of that, of the investigations? As soon as the department became aware of such serious non-compliance issues, investigations were instituted and action was taken based on the outcome of investigations. And on the issues of, action against officials, we can report that two officials at the level of directors were suspended, and they had to undergo disciplinary processes. And one of them was actually dismissed. The other two were suspended without pay for 3 months as sanctions. The other officials are still undergoing disciplinary processes even now, and they are at various stages of completion. We have indeed completed some of the cases, and there have been outcomes. The department also worked together with the Special Investigation Unit to recover money from suppliers who gained through the irregular appointments. So the SIU has actually assisted us there in terms of recovery of some of the money from suppliers. In relation to the measures to strengthen internal control measures, we now have new bids for PPEs have been advertised openly, and no quotations to PPEs is allowed, because the quotation system is the one where we actually found that there were deficiencies in how it had been applied. Now we go the route of open bids. The BEC and BAC are now evaluating all PPE bids. A review of the overall SCM environment has been completed, and an SCM turnaround strategy has been developed and is currently being implemented. Next slide. The department provided some PPE items on at higher prices than those implemented in the National Treasury investigation, and that was one of the findings, which was against the Treasury instruction, which states that the institutions may use other suppliers as long as the prices are equal or lower than those that are stipulated in the guidelines. And the recommendation, the finding was based on prices that were paid prior to the price guidelines issued by the National Treasury. That finding emanates from a situation where the price guidelines, had not been issued yet at that point by National Treasury. With the introduction then of the instruction note 5, which provided clear guidelines on prices, the department has now, complied and is negotiating with cheaper and market related prices, as it has done with mass in the last round of procurement. The national price still remains at about 25 rand, and the department has secured mass now for less than 15 rand per unit. In other words, we've now been able to negotiate with suppliers for a price which is actually 10 rand lower than the national guidelines provide. And why the findings of the AG could not have been avoided. As we have said, there were no price guidelines issued at the time. And the SM manager and the quotations committee failed to benchmark with other departments, such as the Department of Health, who have experience on such specialized item. The investigations were instituted as soon as there were allegations of overpricing. Where suppliers overpriced, the department complied with SIU investigation reports, and we recovered the funds from those suppliers who had actually overcharged. And the actions taken against those officials, we've already said that we suspended two directors, and one of them has since been dismissed. Further disciplinary processes, as we have said, are currently underway. The department, again, we're repeating that we did work with SIU for the recovery of overcharged prices. And measures taken to strengthen our internal control measures. All prices are now guided by the national provisions, and price negotiations are conducted with the recommended the suppliers. And as we've indicated earlier, actually we've been able to negotiate lower prices than those provided in the national guidelines. The provincial treasury also assists us with pre-audit prior to any awards. And that has, we found that it is going to assist to avoid, audit findings such as those that were found. Next slide. On the finding that the quality of goods does not agree to the quotation and invoice, and the other finding was that the department ordered, invoiced, and paid for 61,000 worth of PPEs more than the supplier delivered, and there was no evidence that the supplier delivered the shortfall to the department. The SCM unit in this respect, will ensure that quotations received as per the bid quotation specifications, even in terms of the unit of measure and packaging. And all reconciliation is done and checked, and users at the district level and further reconciliation is done at head office. And discrepancies are actually addressed prior to payments being made. And all delivery notes, are attached to the invoice. And EF73 is completed by the end user indicate goods that were received in a, that the goods were received in a satisfactory condition. And the findings of the investigation was that our SCM unit did not ensure that all suppliers quoted and delivered as per the specification, and the department had requested for quotations of 750 ml sanitizer, and the quotation received was for 500 ml instead of 750. This discrepancy was not detected at the time of the evaluation and the award, and the supplier was notified and duly delivered the additional stock to make up for the difference at no extra charge to the department. In other words, as soon as it was discovered that the quantities delivered were less, the supplier was notified and that was rectified. The investigation highlighted that a number of internal control violations with SAM and corrective measures were implemented. And it was, you know, this finding was one of those that resulted in those two directors being suspended and one being dismissed, as we have indicated. So all these findings in general related to the dereliction of duty by those two directors, and we've already indicated that we took action. Next slide. One of the findings was that there was procurement without obtaining three price quotations, where the KwaZulu-Natal department, our department, obtained two written price quotations instead of three when procuring latex hand gloves to the value of 160,770. There was no record that approved deviation, which goes against paragraph 16A61 of the Treasury regulations and paragraphs 3.31. The nomination, the recommendation was that the nomination, evaluation, and awards committee for quotations have now been trained, and the SAM delegations are being reviewed, especially to strengthen compliance, you know, even in situations where deviations are necessary. And why were the finding, why the findings could not have been, could not be avoided? I think we are admitting there that our SAM managers failed to ensure compliance with deviation provisions when deviating from the standard SAM provisions. And this only became evident when the audit was done. The outcome of the investigations were initiated by the department. In fact, the investigations themselves were initiated by the department when some of these transgressions were reported. And as we have already indicated, all these findings related to, you know, basically the same officials, and it is those officials that we actually suspended and put through disciplinary processes. Next slide. Right. The other finding was that there were quotations that were obtained from suppliers who were not registered on the CSD. The recommended actions was that the nomination committee to verify suppliers on the CSD before calling for quotations. And all quotations nominations are now accompanied by the CSD report for each supplier prior to approval. And why these findings could not have been avoided? The quotation nomination committee failed to verify the CSD registration prior to nomination. The SAM managers failed also to put measures in place to ensure that only suppliers registered on the CSD are invited to quote. Again, it was the same officials. These findings were, implicated the same officials for dereliction of duty. The investigations were initiated as soon as the matter was raised by the AG, and we acted against the officials implicated. Next slide. There were awards, the finding was that there were awards that were made against suppliers who were non-compliant in terms of tax. And as a department, we awarded contracts totaling about 521,000 to two service providers who were non-compliant in terms of tax. And the recommendations, CSD reports to suppliers must be printed on the supplier's tax certificate and confirmed by the nominations committee prior to the quotation invitation award and the order being issued. Why these findings could not be avoided, again, the same officials were at the center of this. They failed to verify tax compliance status for suppliers nominated to quote. And all these findings, if I may say, Chairperson, were part of the charges as these officials were facing the disciplinary processes in the department. And again, we're saying that we did conduct investigations and as soon as we became aware of the findings.
Can I disturb you? I think the principle is understood now in terms of whatever the transgression, the action that the department has taken. So it's like a repetition now because it's the same culprits committing different. I think the principle is noted.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you very much, Chair. Indeed, it is exactly like that.
Can you come closer to concluding?
I think we can move to conclusion because the next few slides are actually talking about consequence management, and as you correctly pointed, the Honourable Chair, the consequence management was indeed in relation to the same officials all the time, and the findings were all part of the charges that were given. And these slides are simply now on a case by case basis indicating how far and what have we done in relation to those disciplinary processes that are still underway. I think we can conclude with that, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Can we now move to the next? The next department, as outlined by the Premier.
Greetings.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Greetings to you, Chair. And am I audible, Chair?
Yes, you are.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to you and the members of the committee and the other departments and the officials who are part of the meeting. Chair, the Department of Human Settlements in the province of KwaZulu-Natal was not necessarily mentioned, or there were no issues that were picked up by the AG regarding the PPE issues and the COVID-19 matters. But the HOD will just give a presentation on just short, on a short presentation on just few matters regarding the informal settlements. But we continue to make sure that you are vigilant in everything that we need to do as the department. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. HOD.
Greetings, members, all protocols observed. Thank you. I'll just take a few minutes of your time for our members. I'll just go straight to the summary.
But we want to see you, if possible.
Okay. Can I request to see you afterwards?
No, No, only if it is possible. If it is not, then I think you can proceed.
Okay, thanks, sir. Yeah, what we are sharing is one of the departments that was not allowed to do any construction work. So in terms of our intervention, as people DG has explained, that it was land partners approach that we undertook. But apart from that, we spent most of the time doing the planning around the four segments.
There's something wrong with your audio. We can't hear you properly.
You must come closer to the mic.
That's the advice.
I'm very close. I'm even standing on it now. Can you hear me?
We can hear you now.
Yes, here is indicating the amount and also the number of informal settlements that we are managing in this province. And also the larger part in other secondary cities that we have, which is of 937. So the whole indication
no,
that...
No, don't hear him.
Yes, I thought I was not correct when I said we can hear you. If there's nothing you can do, I think there's a challenge in terms of... Can you speak again?
Honourable members?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Yeah, the network is very unstable. I was just touching base on that issue of settlements for 937 informal settlements, and we've categorized informal settlements throughout the whole province. And that COVID period, we took time to really classify and categorize them in various areas. But the main issue was having to focus on upgrading plans. And during that period, those upgrading plans have brought us into a better understanding of what needs to be done. So,
he is gone.
Oh. Yeah, network.
If he has got two gadgets on, Chair, the microphones are going to have a problem with each other if they both are on.
So the echo comes from the two.
Yes.
Can we, in the meantime, leave that one and come to DSD, Department of Social Development, as we can see it here? Social Development.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee. Good morning. I will be presenting a report on behalf of the Department of Social Development. We have tried to summarize and zoom in into the recommendation of the Treasury. In terms of the background, there was a forensic report that was done in terms of the procurement of blankets and PPEs in the Department of Social Development. And then the report was received on the 15th of June, which was the procurement of blankets. And then on the 10th of July, 2020, it was the report on the procurement of the PPEs. Then the report recommended that 12 officials be charged with misconduct. But before the report was received, some officials named in the report had exited the employment of the department. One official who was an SMS member resigned before the forensic report was received. And one official who was an SMS member passed away in August 2020. He was not well. And then there were two officials who could not be charged with misconduct because there was no evidence linking them to wrongful and omissions. And then left the department eight officials to be detained.
What is
there's something happening? Can you?
I just want to record this. What is an SMS member?
Personnel Money Service.
Why couldn't it be written like that?
I think she has noted that she will correct that.
Thanks, Chair.
Our time is coming soon to ask. Proceed, HOD.
Thank you very much. Our apologies, Chairperson. Thank you. We will then call them the correct way. May I request that you move to, we move to the next slide. Next slide, please, Mr. Mbambo. Thank you very much. On the 31st of July 2020, the 8 officials were suspended, of which 5 were senior management members, directors upwards. Directors include the chief directors, that the SMS members. One official was found guilty on the 18th of November. A sanction of final written warning was pronounced, and one official was transferred to another section where she will not deal with finance-related matters. And then there was one official who was found guilty on the 10th of May, 2021, and a sanction of demotion from salary level 7 to salary level 6 was also pronounced. So the total savings by the state equals to 45,795 when you calculate the demotion from salary level 7 to salary level 6. And then the officials was also transferred to another section where she will not deal with finance-related matters. The next slide. And then also on consequence management continued as well. There was one official that was found guilty on the 31st of May, and the sanction of demotion from being an assistant director to, which is salary level 9, to senior administration officer, salary level 8, was pronounced. And this official was also further sanctioned 2 months suspension without pay. So when you calculate the savings by the state in terms of the suspension, 2 months suspension, as well as the demotion, it equals to 144,765. And that includes what I've just said. So the official was also transferred to other section where she will not deal with the finance related matters. One official who was a chief director and a chief financial officer resigned on the 29th of May, 2021, and she resigned before the disciplinary matter was finalized. So currently, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we have 4 misconduct hearings that have not yet been finalized, but they all relate to the chief directors, and they're all currently on suspension. And the next slide. In terms of the 3 chief directors, the misconduct hearing, the last sitting was on the 28th of May, 2020, to the 5th of April, 2022. And further information is as follows. So there was evidence that was led, and the case will be completed soon. And there has been some delays when the officials were struggling in terms of securing legal representation. And there were also challenges with regard to the diaries of the legal representatives of the officials, as well as those that are managing the matters, presiding officers and employer rep. So currently the presiding officer on this matter is the senior counsel in the High Court. So currently the dates could not be secured earlier because he has other engagements. So we shall lay it down for about 3 months. The next slide. With regard to the one chief director, the last sitting was from the 28th of March to the 5th of April. The next hearing now is from the 5th to the 16th of September 2022. So the challenges are as indicated before in terms of the other three, and then also the delay in terms of the actual sitting, which now takes us to September, is also based on the availability of the presiding officer, just as we indicated on the previous slide. The next slide. Oh, okay. On the same matter, on the irregular procurement of PPEs and blankets, we also opened criminal cases. There were two cases that were opened in Pietermaritzburg, and these are the case numbers 228 of July 2020 and 227 of July 2020, respectively. And then on the 1st of December, 21st of December 2021, we did receive a report from SAPS indicating that the case has been closed because the decision by the National Prosecuting Authority was not to prosecute. Same applied with the other case that we also received, that there has been a decision by the National Prosecution Authority not to prosecute. So the NPA declined to prosecute, and the reason provided being no prosecutor. The next slide. We must also indicate, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, that with regard to the procurement of the blankets, there are companies that were implicated. For example, two companies, we must indicate that the Special Investigation Unit, that is also part of the process based on the proclamation by the President. So there are two companies that were implicated that... when SIU engaged them, they indicated that they are willing to refund the department. Zane Brothers, an amount of 718,550, and then Rosette Investment, an amount of 864,000. But the department has not yet received this money, but the SIU has confirmed that these companies were transferring the funds to the bank. To government. The next slide. The next slide also, if you can move from this one, there are other companies in the next slide that were also pursued by the SIU through a civil process. So this their matters have not yet been concluded, but that amounts to 4.6 million. These are the other companies that have not yet agreed that they will pay back the money to the department. If you can also move to the next slide. So in terms of our conclusion, we are requesting the portfolio committee to note the progress that has been made in terms of ensuring that consequence management is done in terms of these cases, and how far are we in terms of those that have responded in terms of paying back the money. One thing that Honorable Chair, that we can also indicate is that the department was able also to strengthen the systems in terms of SCM processes, because at that time when this happened, we did not have a qualified SCM manager. So we have since appointed the director responsible for SCM. We're also able to actually establish the bid committees that were not there, and they've been trained and all the systems are in place now. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. I think now what is outstanding might be health. Department of Health, if I'm correct in terms of what was outlined.
All right, can I come in, Chair? Can you hear me?
Yes, yes, yes. We can hear you, but we can't see you.
All right. I hope you can see me now, Chair. No, thank you very much, Chair. Good morning to you. Good morning to the members of the committee, and good morning to the Premier and the colleagues. Chairperson, I don't believe our presentation is going to be very long. The head of department, Dr. Shabalala, on behalf of health, will be presenting our presentation. We are speaking to the issues that were raised by the AG in relation to our management of COVID-19 funds, where there are areas where AG indicated that consequence management had to be implemented, and as the department, we had actually taken the steps that were required to be taken. Through you, Chair, I request that the head of department takes us through. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning to all the principals. Chairperson, one will not board the meeting with the finer details of this presentation. Safe to say that when we were assessed by the Auditor General, two material irregularities were found. It is the same material irregularities that were also found by the SIU. And these are the material irregularities that we had to act on relative to the procurement of, firstly, sanitizers at a price higher than which was prescribed by the National Treasury. The second finding related to procurement of non-sterile examination gloves above price. These both were investigated and found to be material irregularities, as I've said, by AG, and SIU also was able to engage the department and the involved service providers. We are in the process now. If we go to slide seven. Go to slide seven, Babu Mbambo. Yes, this slide is showing us relative to the sanitizer that the process of recouping money is ongoing. We have recovered up to now 668,214.35, and there is an outstanding balance. The service provider is cooperating with the SIU on behalf of the department. If you go to slide 8, again there you find that the issue was the procurement of non-sterile gloves, which also was found by Auditor General. Even there, that material irregularity was agreed to, and the money is being recovered. Subsequent to that as well, we had to meet out the consequence management against three staff of our own within the unit of SCM. On top of that, we further beefed up the SCM unit by employing two directors that did not exist there before. These are the only two findings that related to us. We are continuing with the monitoring and implementation of the prescripts that guide us in terms of the procurement of all these and other related consumables. mean, our presentation will be that short, Chairperson. There isn't much that is new relative to that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you much. I'm not sure if human settlement is prepared to come back, but they did indicate that they were not necessarily part of this. Honorable Premier, we will now, unless you decide to allow members to engage, then maybe you'll come after that. If there's anything missing before we allow members to engage, we will allow you that space. Maybe let's use this opportunity to say now we will allow members to engage with the presentation, the form of questions, comments, whatever. I can see Honorable Mkalipi, you are the first one. Participants. Honorable Mbumza, you are number two. Honorable Matumba, number three. Honorable Direko, number four. Peggy Hadebe, number five. Honorable
Rain, please record me, Chair, because I'm trying here. My MacBook does not want to raise hand. Eh?
You are.
Thanks.
Yes, well, Chair.
Okay, let's, Honorable Mkalip, I think we'll come down with yourselves. I think all of you are in. Honorable Mkalip.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. Greetings to the Premier. Greetings to the colleagues, MSs. I don't know why my video does not want on. Okay, Chair, I just want to show my face and then I will just close my video. Thanks, Chairperson. Greetings to the Premier and the MSCs and the head of departments. Thanks for the presentation. There's a lot of departments, Chair, who have done the presentation, but it was interesting. Chair, I just want to say that we last met with the delegation from KZN, led by the Premier Sihle Zikalala in 2020. It has been 2 years so far. And unfortunately, we are meeting again after another disaster that have took place as a form of floods. And it's a very, very concerning, the fact that each time when we have to meet with the KZN, we have to meet during disasters. But this time we are not making a follow-up on floods, and I hope it will be soon, because we need to as well to make follow-ups in terms of what has happened in KZN lately. Chair, I have so many questions, but I know that I can't ask all of them. And our colleagues there in the committee, they will help. It is unfortunately that the Department of Human Settlement couldn't make this presentation, although they are not direct involved in terms of what the AG raised in terms of COVID-19 financial statement. But their presentation was very, very interesting. I was looking forward to it. Unfortunately, Mr. Zungu was not able to make a presentation because it talks to the development. One of our main problems that we are facing as a country is the lack of development. And according to the presentation, it says that there are about, in KZN, 903, if I'm not mistaken, informal settlement, of which it's specifically characterized the problem that we are facing in terms of the challenges of development. As a result, when there is pandemic that is taking place, can be floods, can be COVID. People who happen to be coming from informal settlement are the one that are most affected. So I was looking forward to engage with them in terms of the upgrading They have plans in terms of upgrading the informal settlement. And according to their presentation, they have timelines, they have budget, but it also lacks the progress in order for us as a committee members to follow if we want to make a follow-up in terms of the upgrading. So I hope that the NEC, Sotobe, who is here, is going to talk to that. Because when I check their presentation, there's a lack of progress report in that regard. We need to have that kind of the progress report in order for us to make a follow-up. But again, Chairperson, last time when we were here, I raised the matter of Brooks Farm. And the MSC promised with the head of ministry that they are going to attend to the matter. So I just want to make a follow-up to the MSC of Housing for Human Settlement in KZN to check how far with the matter that we raised here formally at the committee level. Chair, I just want to engage with the COCTA in the province, the presentation that was done by Ms. Joy. There are a lot of things that she said in her presentation, but the main major things that I want to check with her, as a specific section in the department who is supposed to guide municipalities in terms of the pandemic, which was COVID by the time in 2020. So one of the things that she is saying that she, or under her department, unfortunately, the HOD couldn't make the presentation. They are the one who's supposed to guide the municipalities. So in her department, I want to find out, because there is a lot of things that were raised by the AG. For instance, she is saying in her presentation, some of the municipalities didn't apply for the grant of COVID. But the AG is saying that AG raised concern in some of the municipalities, such as eThekwini, Umkhanyakude, Ilembe, and so forth and so forth. And eThekwini was also being listed as a metro. In an excessive, using some of the funds in excessive price paid for surgical face mask. So it is said that the metro ordered 100,000 surgical face masks for 22 rand each, which was 76% more than treasurer's market related price of 12 rand 48 cent per mask, resulting in excess payment amounting 952,000. So I just want to check, has anyone at Tekwini been held accountable for that excessive price paid for this particular face mask? The other worrying factor that was also need to be clarified here is that under Zululand District Municipality, is any action that has been taken in relation to the audit finding from that municipality as a district that under use goods and service, that the employees in that municipality is only 1,000. But the money that was spent for surgical mask was 17.5 million on 500,000 surgical masks, and further 2.5 on 500,000 disposal surgical gloves, which translates to 500 surgical masks and 500 pairs of surgical gloves for each employee. Chair, we are talking about 1,000 employees in the Zululand district. So can we be explained here by Joy? Because it does not add up. This is a plain corruption. Maybe we can be assisted if there was anyone who was held accountable about this plain corruption that took place while we were faced with this pandemic. And again, she is saying that in her slides, or when she was doing a presentation, one of the challenges is that there was a decline on revenue. I remember very well when we were engaging here with municipalities, Chairperson. While we want the municipality to ensure that there is a revenue that is also being collected from municipalities, but during COVID-19, many people lost their work. So since this department, we're supposed to give guidance to municipalities, I don't hear her speaking specifically on what support did or what guidance did they give to those people who lost their job during COVID-19. As a result, the municipality were affected. They couldn't collect revenue, But the fact of the matter that most of the people who are supposed to pay for services at the municipal level, they were affected because they lost their job and the lockdown and so forth and so forth. What supports did you give to those vulnerable people? Because even now, people are still saying that since 2020, COVID-19, things are still bad. But I don't hear them as the Department of COGTA coming very clearly to say, Tina, as a department, that's what we have done. And she is saying that the money that was allocated to them, she even said that 20 billion was allocated for KZN in a nutshell. But she is further saying that there was infrastructure that was provided, especially for the people that wanted to be housed. I just want to get a list of those infrastructure because she is mentioning even at Etequini. If you can also be provided as this committee, Chairperson, because we are expected to go and do the oversight about the list of the infrastructure that were also provided in a form of providing shelters for people with the provision of water. Because now we could have also used that particular infrastructure if it's still there, or if it's not there, at least we knew that there was a particular infrastructure that was provided for, especially for poor people. So we could have used that infrastructure now during the floods, a disaster that happened in KZN. So we will be very, very happy if we can be provided. Coming to Department of Education, yes, I note very well, as well as you, Chairperson, you have also noted that, you know, the HOD was zooming in on the investigation that the department is going to embark on. But I just want to get, because according to the presentation by Umapoloba, which is the HOD of education, he is not specific in terms of the time frame. So that's why I want also to ask the HOD of social development as well. When she was also speaking about what measures or what investigation the department have took against those who were fingered in terms of investigation, for how long? Because I have noticed in her presentation as well that this matter dates back as 2020. It's 2022 now. I think during her last slides, she even said, no, there is new date which is pushing forward those cases in terms of the HR processes of ensuring that those who committed crime and the department have zoomed in to process them. But it's taking too long, Chair. 2 years for 12 officials, according to her presentation of Fitch Game. She said out of 12, two resigned and one passed away and so forth. But I'm saying the whole process is taking too long. And if we, as Uhulumeni, if we are not going to send a clear signal to people who committed crime, especially during the pandemic. So anyone will just say that, no, it's just a matter of threatening. So we need to send a very strong message as the departments. So I'm saying to Umapoloba, the HOD of education, is well and good that the department is intending to do the investigation and so forth. But if you are not attaching the time frame, maybe the likelihood is that you are going to meet with you again after 2 years. And after 2 years, there will be so many issues that will be needed to be also to be engaged with the department. Those are my few questions that I would like to and comment, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mbomza.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to you, Chairperson, colleagues, and the Premier, the MECs, and all officials across the board. Chair, let's welcome the presentation by different departments. First and foremost, Chair, I would like to go to the Department of Social Development. The HOD, when she was apparently presenting on consequence management, she indicated that one official on the 29th of whatever month, is it June 2021, who has apparently those who were followed, but that particular official has actually resigned. I want to know what has happened to that particular official who had resigned. Was he or she allowed to go scot-free? Or has a criminal case been opened against that official who actually resigned when followed with disciplinary processes? The second one, Chair, relates to the fact that the HOD indicates that the National Prosecuting Authority has refused to prosecute. And she's, I don't know whether is it Italian or whatever. She indicates that the reason for NPA refused to prosecute, she says, I heard her saying is non-prosecutare or whatever. Could she clarify that? Was it that perhaps the case is that the verdict was not that up to scratch, that the prosecuting authority apparently refused to prosecute? Chair, the Auditor General in, should I call her, in her second special report, has made recommendations to the head of the department in the Department of Health that he or she should investigate the procurement of 100,000 filtering face piece grade mask. To the value of 4 million, whether these were suitable for use, which they were procured for, and was there investigation that undertaken, and if so, what were the results? On the same vein, Chair, the Auditor General had requested that the accounting officer was also advised to investigate a contract entered into with the service provider to the value of 10.36 million, but of which 24.28 million was paid without justification, resulting in an irregular expenditure. Was this one investigated? If so, what were the results? Chair, on the same vein is that nine PPE orders that totaled 29.3 million was awarded to suppliers who had non-compliant tax certificates. This rendering the expenditure irregular. Was this particular irregular expenditure disclosed and investigated? Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Matumba. We can't hear you, but you can see that you are trying. Can you come later?
Defaulted with connection for my video.
Yes.
Oh, okay, Chair. Let me find. So you can hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Chair. I'm just having difficulties with the network. I will start with the last presentation where official was found guilty and moved to another department. You know, a member of parliament, Mamu Kaula, said, where they by John Changalapa, never making a lap. It's exactly what is happening here. I mean, a person who's found guilty is being moved to another department, and the justification is that that person is not going to work with finances. But a thief is a thief. They will find something to steal and make money out of it. Now, I'll go through. So we need proper justification. Why do you have a person found guilty being moved to another department instead of proper consequences management? Now, we are being told, yes, human settlements, that you have 937 informal settlements in KZN. The question is, what definition are we using to define informal settlement? What definition are we using? Are we using the colonial definition and the apartheid definition? Because if we are using that, that's why we'll say we have 937 informal settlements. There is this thing of justifying a lack of services in villages and rural areas by saying those are villages, those are rural areas. Those things are informal settlement as long as there is no flushing toilet, as long as there is no sewage system and water connection into their houses, clinic, hall, and those facilities that must be there in a formal settlement. That thing is informal settlement. And this is what punished people in KZN. Because most of them rely on these things of mobile clinics. Now, when COVID comes, it hits them hard because they don't even have a clinic they can rely on. They rely on mobile clinic, even those we claim that are in a formal settlement. Because it's not formal settlement based on our own standards of people who love themselves as black people, to say we are doing away with the definition of informal settlement given to us by those who oppressed us before. So I think we need to deal with that, to say if ever there are no services, that place it's formal settlement. Whether stands are cut properly or what, as long as there are no services, it's informal settlement until they have water, they have clinic, they have proper roads, they have basic services. Because we even have a government project where water pipes are being put in at the corner of the street so that they go and fetch water through the wheelbarrow. I mean, that is extremely wrong. Now, I will go to illegal connection. We would have wanted to know where there is illegal connection is because there is no legal connection. So when you give us a report on illegal connection, you must also give us a report. When are you going to connect legally? Because as long as you are not connecting legally, those people are going to connect illegally and you are going to suffer from electricity loss. Now, Chair, let me go to municipalities. The reporting of UIF, we are told this reporting of UIF offering training. There is one thing that we are not getting here. And if we don't get that thing right, immediately if the AG collapses and can't do her work properly, corruption is going, that thing that member of parliament, Honorable Khalid was saying, plain corruption is going to be worse. And why plain corruption? It's plain corruption because mechanisms which are put in place to deal with corruption and to deal with UIF are not there. What we are not getting from the report was any UIF reported in terms of Section 32, Subsection 4 of Municipal Financial Management Act? Was there anyone who was reported to the police in terms of Subsection 6 of the same Act? Did Council ensure that the matter is dealt with properly in terms of Section 6 using subsection 7. We are not getting that. What we get every time is allegation, that allegations were reported and we acted on allegations. What about municipal mechanisms which must deal with these things? Because we must get, did management report UIF to executive committee? Did the executive committee report to council? Did council report to MPEC? What are the findings of MPEC? What did the council do after getting the findings from MPEC? We are not getting this report. And a perfect example is on eThekwini. It was raised by Honorable Mkhalip on the prices of the mask. Because it's questionable. When a management report their spending of their budget, didn't any oversight committee pick it up that we are buying a single mask by 19 rand? It should have happened. So when we talk of consequences management, that is why it only go to the management and not to politicians who failed to do their oversight, because even the department itself, it's failing to do its work in terms of Section 34 of Municipal Financial Management Act of providing monitoring function. Because even here, we are not getting a report. This is what we do when monitoring. This is what we picked up. This is what we did in order to assist the municipalities, because it is there in this act to assist them. I think I've covered everything, because even to investigate value for money, that is something that councils should have done. So, Chair, from the reports that we are getting, it is clear that in the absence of whistleblowers who report the allegations, in the absence of AG, we clearly don't have mechanisms to deal with corruption and UIF. The municipalities currently, as things stand, don't have capacity. Now, the last question to report on municipality is, what was the role of SALGA in terms of capacitating municipalities? What did SALGA do? Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Direko. Honorable Direko. Okay. We can see you, but you can't hear.
Thank you. My network is very bad. Chair, I've got quite some questions for COCTA. Let me first welcome the presentation that has been made, and also welcome the presence of the Premier in our meeting. He's one of the few premiers who's consistent in attending our meeting, and we really appreciate that. Chair, I would like to check with COCTA as to what are the lessons that they have learned from the COVID pandemic in terms of provision of services during the disaster and the procurement system in order to combat corruption in future. And COVID has affected many of our municipalities, especially in terms of local economy, which resulted to unemployment, lack of revenue collection. And I would like to check with them, is there any economic recovery in place for our municipalities? If they do, what support are they providing as COCTA to our municipalities? In municipalities where the Auditor General has... Chair, can I switch off my video because I have network challenge where I am.
No, it's fine. You can.
In municipalities where the Auditor General has raised concern regarding the usage of COVID fund, is there any consequence management in place in those municipalities? And what is the role of COCTA in ensuring that the findings of AG are being addressed in these municipalities? And Chair, the other one is on the provincial treasury. On their report, Chair, they have indicated that certain departments submitted incorrect information to the national treasury. So I would like to check with them, what was the reason behind this department submitting incorrect information, and how has the matter been resolved? And Chair, on Department of Social Development, it's also in line with what Ntate Mpumza have just asked, whereby a person resigns prior receiving the forensic report. So has the department followed the matter? And what nature of offense did that particular official committed? And how are they going to recoup if there are financial implications on the matter? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Adebe.
Thank you, the Honorable Chairperson. As you can see, Chair, this is proof of life. Yet I'm struggling with connectivity, so I thought I should just switch on my video to indicate proof of life. I also want to take this opportunity and welcome the presentation, and also welcome Honorable Premier and your delegation, the MECs. Indeed, I want to concur with my latter speaker, Honorable Direko, that this should be also inculcated to all other premiers, the dedication and commitment to accountability and oversight by the Premier of KZN. We really appreciate your time, Honorable Premier. Chair, I've got a few questions because majority of the questions have been already covered by my fellow colleagues. In one or two presentations, there has been mention of pre-audit undertaken to avoid irregularities, and also working closely in collaboration with AG in all the transactions at the beginning of the pandemic. And also when they were talking about measures to strengthen internal controls, this issue of pre-audit was also mentioned, that they are currently conducting pre-audit as one of the measures to strengthen internal controls. Yet, Chair, with all these pre-audit, certain irregularities have occurred. Money were lost, misappropriated, mismanaged. Now, when you hear one of the measures to strengthen internal control, it's again pre-audit. The question would be, what difference will this pre-audit do this time around if it could not achieve what was intended previously? Can I just get a clarity? What lessons have you learned when you have conducted pre-audit and you still continue to incur irregularities in terms of your transaction in relation to the COVID-19 transaction? The second question, Honorable Chairperson, there was mention of civil litigations in order to recover monies lost. I would like to get an understanding, how much were the financial loss, and are these financial recoveries equivalent to the finances that were lost, and who are the officials or parties concerned in these civil litigations in terms of financial recoveries? Is it officials? Is it service provider? And if it's service providers, are they still doing business with the state? Have they been blacklisted? Have they been prohibited from conducting a business with the state? Those are my two questions, Chair, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable Brink.
Thank you, Chairperson. I agree with the sentiments expressed by some of the colleagues, or at least one of them, that the main concern now is not so much COVID, although this meeting is an important continuation meeting on the issue of COVID-related procurement. It's the fact that KZN is currently under a different national state of disaster, and there is national money that has been granted to the province and to municipalities to deal with the situation. And the concern is for how that money is spent, not just here in Parliament, but also among the public. So I think it's very important to stress at this point that we would like to have an engagement with the province in respect of the current national state of disaster in that province. Only question I would add to those posed by my colleagues is whether any of these officials in education, social development, any of the departments concerned that were charged for misconduct or the misappropriation of funds or breaching procurement regulations, whether any of them in their disciplinary hearings pointed the finger to a politician, to a member of the executive committee, to a mayor, to a member of the mayoral committee or the executive committee, basically with saying it is the politician or it's the political principle that instructed me to do this. If we can just have an answer to that. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Eza.
No, thank you very much, Chair. The beautiful thing about speaking last is that most of the questions, a majority of them, then gets to be covered by capable members of the committee. But leaving me, Chair, with one comment or two questions, that the municipality's dependence, Chair, on tenders to deliver most services is inevitably linking or leading to corrupt processes and inflated prices. And this is clear in what we have been witnessing throughout this particular presentations, Chair. It is inevitable in that once capacity is not built, this we have been saying for a very long time now in the committee, once capacity is not built internal in municipalities in order to discharge their functions, the problem with that is that certain officials get connected to those external service providers, with the result that we are seeing there, Chair, the amounts that are that should have been recovered with Zane Brothers and the other company there, Rosette Investment, to the tune of 718,55 and 864 for Rosette Investment. The what is left for me there is whether they have information as to the envisaged period that the SIU would pay the monies to the department, which is owed to the department. And Chair, then on slide 5 of the report to the portfolio committee, Proctor and PT presentation, slide 4, there they speak about 43 municipalities audited countrywide. And then they go on to say that top three they speak about top three contributors to the irregular expenditure incurred for 2018-19 financial year. They say eThekwini Lembe umkhanyakude tuke Zululand. My interest, Chair, is in terms of Section 32.1C of the MFMA there, and even subsection 2 of Section 32 of the FMMA, that a municipality must recover unauthorized irregular fruit. What action have they taken in this regard, with in line with this legislation, in order to ensure that those contributors to irregular expenditure then return what is due to municipalities and departments? How much financial loss did the social department incur in the irregular procurement of blankets and PPE? Are the reported recoveries equal to the amount lost? If so, how so? And then we would go to that has been covered there in terms of excessive prices. Then we move on to the fact that you have a situation generally that is caused by the outsourcing of functions of services. That the paradox is that services are not delivered to the people within this disaster. And then slide 6, Chair, the concern that I have is the kids glove that I used to actually recycle corruption. I have a problem with that, because I don't think that is a consequence management that we should get from the departments, that you then got a person to be removed from a position where there is finances. And this has been said by Honorable Matumba here. And then the sanction on demotion. You can just demote someone from another level of this. And then, of course, you tell us what the state has saved on that. Is this not a case of suppliers connected to this, to the officials connected to the suppliers? If not, how does the forensic report connect the officials to these suppliers? I think that those are my questions, Chair. That's the beauty of having everybody speaking before you. Thank you very much.
I'm not sure, Honorable Matumba, whether your hand is an old hand. Can I assume that is the situation?
No, it's an old hand, Chair.
Okay, no, then, thanks. Now, the order, Honorable Premier and MECs, would be best arranged if we follow the same order that we were presenting. But when you have no question, then there will be no point to come up. We start with the Premier to say if you make a choice, they can all come in, and after they have rounded up, then you can speak. You can start, lay the foundation, and then allow others to follow. Thanks.
No, thanks, Chair. Maybe let me start and be brief. We take note of questions raised and of concerns about the commitment and practical expression of the fight against corruption. I must hasten to say, yes, we are following and working to ensure that all recommendations from AG are implemented. But it is not true that we are only dependent and committed to fulfill or to implement reports from the AG on our own. There are a number of areas, a number of investigations that we conduct and take disciplinary actions. So I thought I should just clear that point, that it is not that we are only dependent on whistleblowers and AG. No, there are other mechanisms. There are people who report. We take issues through our forensic investigating unit. There are cases where we identify that it looked like something didn't go well here, and we subject those things into investigations. So I thought I should clarify that. We have been in some case, we have been in all cases emphasizing the value for money, that wherever we spend, there should be tangible results that confirms that the money that is spent is spent in a intended project, and all prizes that were incurred were accordingly, and not that we just allow people to do anyhow. So I would want to emphasize those points. I will then allow departments, because I can't take issues, questions directed to departments, but I would like departments to proceed and respond to issues that are directed to them. Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for this opportunity. We remain very open, transparent, and we are willing and committed to ensure that there is consequence management and ensure that we get rid of corruption. We want a corrupt-free government. Thank you.
Thank you. And let's follow the order.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I wasn't sure if my MEC wanted to come in, but maybe let me just respond. It's Carol Katsia from the Provincial Treasury. In terms of the issues of the incorrect information, some of the issues that happened is that departments simply just captured information incorrectly. They would have issued orders which were subsequently cancelled. So in terms of the commitment reports that had been submitted in the prior months, obviously would need to be amended. There were a number of different issues that were in those. Also, just in terms of that, we have tried to assist the departments as much as possible to correct their reports, but they are engaging with National Treasury, who has taken this process over some few months ago, and they're busy validating that information. So that process is underway. There was also BAS code, for example, that was created that not all the departments allocated their expenditure correctly to. So those are some of the kind of issues that were there, but the National Treasury will finalize the report and then submit that accordingly. In terms of the lessons learned through the pre-audit, so Provincial Treasury wasn't involved from the onset of the departments incurring expenditure. We only became involved from October 2020. So obviously, you know, that was a challenge. Some of the issues that were identified by the Auditor General would have predated the work that we've done. The pre-audits, the key objective of the pre-audit is to ensure that before any awards are made, that a proper due SCM process was followed. And that is what we are also currently doing now. And I suppose that's the lesson learned, that we need to be in place upfront. It's immediately that a disaster is declared. Treasury then steps in and plays a role, and that is the decision of the Executive Council, and that is what we're doing with the current expenditure being incurred on the disasters of April 2020. Also, just to mention here just other processes, we've, in terms of the internal audit that was undertaken, we have noted that there are still shortcomings in some of these departments in the SM processes. this has informed the interventions that we've provided actual resources to some of those departments. We've undertaken training, but we know this is an ongoing matter and will always require our support and our attention. And as I said, in terms of the current disaster, we are also giving regular practice notes to the departments to guide them in terms of the procurement processes. And we are on standby 24 hours to give any guidance to departments to ensure that we prevent any irregular expenditure from taking place. Thank you very much, Chair.
Yes. I'm not sure if the MEC wants to say something as well. Or we can move to the next department.
Department of
Yes, Honorable. Unmute, yes.
Is it culture or education according to your list?
MSC Shomuka.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. I'm greeting to your good self and honorable members, the Premier of KwaZulu-Natal and colleagues and all senior officials. I think, Chair, we want to note the comments and questions raised by the honorable members. It's safe to say, maybe let me start by responding to a few issues and then, with your permission, request HOD and team to respond to some in case I've omitted some of the questions. On the question that was raised by honorable members to say, what are we doing as COCT to assist the people that they have lost their work because of the COVID-19? If colleagues, they can go back to the presentation that we have made, especially slide 21, which indicate that slide start with the 2020-2021 analysis and report. It indicates that municipalities, as we are working with municipalities, were being agreed that they must try to have a temporal suspension of the credit control for those who have lost their job, and also temporal suspension of interest on areas. But besides that, we are encouraging those people or household to apply to municipalities under the program that is called Indigency Program, because each and every municipalities, they have an indigency policy. So they must apply, and municipalities, they are approving all those who qualify in terms of the indigency policy, so that they won't pay rates, those who have been paying rates on the basis that they were working, and also they will be given free services as like any other people who are not working. But besides that, we are also encouraging, because as we work with other sector departments, they are also working with the Ministry of Labor so that they will be able to get what is due to them, and they will be able to sustain themselves. On the issue of what are we doing in terms of the municipalities or officials from the municipalities that are fingered in the Auditor General report, and in terms of the consequence management, and what are we doing in terms of investigating for those municipalities? One of the municipalities that has been cited in the presentation, in the input or comments raised by the honorable members was Zululand. I must maybe start by saying, colleagues, they will, and oral members, they will know that the president have signed a proclamation to investigate number of municipalities, which include Zululand, Ilembe, and Ethekwini. As the SIU, they have started that process of investigating for PPE. From our side, even though we have started internally using our official to investigate that, but we thought it won't be correct to duplicate services as the presidency investigate through SIU, will then also do the investigation. We don't think it would be correct to have a parallel process, especially in investigation. We're waiting for the outcome of the SIU report. We'll then take it from there to be table in the full council of all those municipalities. Then a request to enforce the municipalities to implement the recommendations of the investigation. But I must make aware the honourable members that in terms of the Municipal Systems Act, I think if we'll be allowed to read the section 106 of it, it gives powers to the MEC for co-opter or local government, let me say, MEC for local government in the province to investigate any allegations of fraud and corruption or maladministration in the municipalities. And it gives the specific, especially on subsection B, that an MEC can appoint a person or persons or institution that be investigate in this department. One of the things that we must raise in this forum on this meeting, if colleagues they are aware, we investigated a number of air allegations from Zululand using section 106. Then the municipality, the council of municipality, as we are aware that that municipality is one of those municipalities that is co-governed because of the coalition. All parties, they agree that no, they want to challenge the forensic investigation done by COCTA to they've taken the report to court. And what is interesting from the court order has said no, they don't think that the department, they were not supposed to investigate Zululand district the way we investigate. We normally investigate like the way SIU investigate, the way Hawks investigate, because investigation is the same, we follow the same processes, but they say we must use the Commission Act rather than to investigate. It's a matter that we are taking it to court back because we don't think the judge that was presiding over the matter really, in our view, understood how the local government pass systems dictate that how we must investigate the matters of local government. But safe to say, again, on the matters that have been raised on the irregular and unauthorized fruitless expenditure, as one matter was or question raised, what are we doing in terms of recovering all the expenditures that have been done wrong in the municipality? it's correct to say that the oral member indeed quoted correctly the Municipal Finance Management Act of Section 32, which say a municipality must recover in case there's unauthorized, irregular, or wasteful expenditure. But there is a process that is defined in the MFMA that say an accounting officer will be liable or responsible for any irregular or UIFW in case there is no process of recovery and consequence management. But the Act says the council must appoint a committee of the council to investigate that matter. And then after that, that committee must have investigated the matter. It must then present the recommendation to the council. And then we're monitoring that process. Then one question that was asked, what if some of the official, they will say, whatever that I was doing because I was instructed by the mayor or any councillor, then what will happen to that? Also, the Act gives powers in terms of the now the Amendment Structures Act. It gives powers in terms of code of conduct that in case there is a councillor that has been found doing wrong thing, then Code of Conduct Structures Act kick in to say the council, the speaker must discipline and establish a committee that will deal with the wrongdoings of the council. If the speaker failed, then the MEC have given powers by that Structures Act Code of Conduct to discipline that council. Then it will depend on the sanction on because of the merit of the case. I must, Chair, draw you to indicate that there are a number of municipalities that were investigating, and from time to time, because that's why the Systems Act, Section 106, it says if the MAC has started the process, have taken a decision to investigate, the MSA must write to NCOP within 14 days. If the office of the chair in the NCOP can check their archive, they will see that the number of letters that we have sent to NCOP chair to report that we are starting a process of investigating certain municipalities as just to make the NCOP aware because we are directed by the Act to do so, and we will deal with those issues. On the issue of the grants that have been affected because of COVID-19, there was a directive that from national that we must work with municipalities to reprioritize their project on the basis of COVID-19 to focus and ensure that whatever that they were doing or were doing at that time, we focus on the challenge of COVID-19, especially on the issues of water. And some issues in case the municipalities were planning to do something else and at that time because of the level that were at in terms of level 1 or level 2 of COVID-19, then we're supposed to, municipalities, they were supposed to reprioritize their budget. And indeed, we're working with the municipalities to assist them and also with national, COCTA, national finance, where there's a team that we established as a department working with municipalities and also with national so that they will able to approve, the reprioritization grants. I think those are the matters that I thought one must respond, Chair, because in case I've omitted some, I will then request that the HOD to come in and add in case I have omitted some. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you to all your members.
With your
yes, yes. If there's anything you can add.
With your permission, Chairperson, I'm not sure why I can't show the video.
No, it's fine. You can speak now. We have seen it.
No, I think, Chairperson, the MSC has covered a lot of ground with regards to the questions the honourable members put to the department. Maybe if one were to take the last point on the reprioritization of grants and how these grants were monitored, honourable members would have seen circulars from National Treasury directing that.
Chair.
Yes, sir.
Chair, he's speaking for the first time. We must see the video.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. Okay.
He's a friend, Babu Mpumza Wayne.
All the honourable members, let's allow the HOD to speak. Can you see now he has disappeared?
Chairperson, you would recall. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, Chairperson, I'm trying to amplify some of the issues that the MSC made. For an example, with regards to the monitoring of the infrastructure as well as the grants associated with the efforts of dealing with the COVID, we did receive various circulars from DCOG to say municipalities can apply to DCOG or to DCOG in terms of the infrastructure grants as well as to Department of Water and Sanitation in respect of the water service authorities. But they were required to report in terms of the existing framework, meaning even if you reprioritize, you would have received an approval from either Department of Water and Sanitation or from COCTA, then you report accordingly. So the reports on reprioritizations are available. They can be extracted from the systems, both of the system of water and sanitation, as well as the of COCTA, that could give a clear indication on the reprioritization efforts that would have been conducted in this department. There was also an issue, Chairperson, of the, I think the MSC also covered the issue of the investigations taking place in these municipalities and the position probably that was taken not to duplicate the investigations that are ongoing. We may also indicate here that the only two municipalities thus far, which as this department we have interacted with, with the SIU is Umkhonkhondlovu and Umngeni. Those are the municipalities where we have had engagements and with SIU as well as the municipalities themselves. So we're hoping then that as the SIU continues to investigate in other municipalities, similar engagements with this department will also be undertaken. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Can we now ask Department of Education?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. There were actually two questions that
related to the Department of Education. The first one by Honorable Mkalipi was about timeframes for completing the disciplinary processes against the officials that we have taken action against. The response thereof is that we have actually completed some of the cases as indicated. But in respect of those where processes are still ongoing, I must state that according to our plan, the 30th of June 2022 is the deadline by which we have given to our presiding officers and then prosecuting officers for them to complete these cases. So 30th of June is the time frame, barring, of course, any postponements that may be granted by presiding officers, in which then we don't have much of an influence, because we don't also want to compromise the integrity of the processes. Although we can try to insist that cases be completed at a particular time, but the independence of presiding officers has to be respected so that we don't compromise the processes. In respect of the other question, whether executing authorities implicated or politicians implicated, I must say that in as far as our own disciplinary processes and officials who have appeared before those, none has implicated any politician up to this stage. Even in the findings, none of the findings and recommendations of those investigations were pointing in that direction. I think those were the questions which were relevant to the Department of Education, and we so submit our responses. Thank you.
Thank you. Can we then ask Department of Social Development?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Thank you for the questions. I would like to respond to the question posed by Honorable Bumza in terms of the official that resigned. The question was, why did we allow the official to resign? There is no law that prevents a person from resigning, so we couldn't hold him not to resign. But we were also banking on the fact that because we have opened criminal cases, that in instances where there are matters that actually pinned down the official in terms of the criminal cases that were opened, that we'll be able to actually even ensure that we look into the recovery at that point. But we have not yet found anything positive from that regard. With regard to the question by in terms of the nolle prosequitur, the problem is that when you open the case, the police do the investigation, and in this case, we are working with the Hawks as well. So they do the investigation, and then they send the documents to the National Public Prosecution Authority for consideration. So if the response says nolle prosequitur, that they will not be able to actually pursue the matter, then there was nothing that we could do as the department, because they do not give you further reasons as far as that is concerned. With regard to the question by Honorable Matumba, that why moving the official from one section to the other. I think that was part of a sanction. For example, if you are demoted and that the sanction says you must not work in an environment where there are finances. Like one of them, I recall that we is now working in registry, records management, opening files and so on, but not near anywhere where there are financial issues or finance department as part of a sanction that was imposed. Remember when we have disciplinary processes, you'll have a presiding officer and then the employer rep, and then they will deal with the matter independent of us as management in each case in line with the Labor Relations Act. I must indicate, honorable members, that we have our senior counsel that is a presiding officer in our cases, and they are the ones who are managing this matter for us. We are almost done with the matters. And then with regard to the question by Honorable Hadebe in terms of the civil recoveries, and how much is lost as against how the amounts that were actually spent. In our case, we had the amounts of 22 million with regard to the procurement of blankets, and then 19 million with regard to the procurement of the PPEs. But at this point in time, in terms of the ages report as well as the forensic report, was that there was irregular procurement of these items, which then says that the SCM processes were not followed, even though the goods were delivered. So which then means then that we had to then ensure that we get recoveries in terms of the proclamation that made SIU to be on board. So the two companies that have come forward to repay the money, the Rosetta and Zetas, because they overcharged the department in terms of the procurement of those goods. But SIU is pursuing the other two companies because all in all, they were four in terms of the procurement of blankets. But there are other companies that SIU is still pursuing, which then says that we need to look, we have not reached that stage to say these have agreed that this was supposed to, this is the amount that they were supposed to to charge the department as against the normal price. So overall, we'll then be in a position to actually see if there is value for money in terms of the recoveries, because the other companies have not yet responded positively in terms of declaring that they will pay back the money. I think Honorable Chair, I've covered the questions that were for the Department of Social Development. And thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Social Development, if you are back, I think there were some comments about yourselves, but they were not necessarily questions. But if social development is not there, then we will take hands, honorable members, if there are any follow-ups. Okay. Yes.
Chairperson, sorry. I'm sorry not to raise a hand. This is MEC Sibiya from Human Settlements. There was a question from Honorable Mkhaliphi.
Yes, you can proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for granting us an opportunity. I'm sorry not to raise a hand once again. Chair, Honorable Mkhaliphi, thank you for the question, and we appreciate what has been said regarding some issues around human settlements in the province. It's a matter outside the issues of consequence management and issues that were raised by the AG. It was a report that we're just going to present for the indulgence of the committee. But I think it's proper that we respond to it. The question regarding the Brooks Farm. On the Brooks Farm upgrade, informal settlement upgrade, the Department of Human Settlements in KwaZulu-Natal has already dealt with and built about 406 houses that we have completed out of 465. 406 have been completed altogether. And then we've got 59, about 59 of bigger structures that don't meet the criteria or that don't pass the means test of the Department of Human Settlements, where we need to. They are beyond our means test, bigger structures, and the people have been asking that we help them as well regarding the issue of the material supply and give them the vouchers. We're still waiting for the National Department of Human Settlements because they haven't approved, because that will be a deviation from the normal practice. So we haven't reimbursed these households. But we are working on it, Chairperson. We'll be reporting as well on this matter, but we'll continue to engage with all the members of the portfolio committee, even outside this meeting, even with Honorable Nkalipi, because I know she's been part of this matter since its inception, and we'll continuously give her the feedback and the progress on the matter. Thank you very much, Chairperson. On the other matter that was raised, I think it was a comment.
Yes, it was a comment. Honorable members, any follow-ups? If there are none, I would be happy. I say, Honorable Matumba, can I take that hand?
No, thanks, Chair. Chair, we didn't get an answer on the role played by SALGA. Because when SALGA come here every time, they say they are facing a problem of poor political leadership. That's what they say when they come here. So we wanted to have the story on the other side. What is it that SALGA is doing to capacitate municipalities? So we wanted that. Now, a premier answered that there are people who report and there are cases where we suspect we do investigate. But what I want to give to the premier is that we are here based on section 42, subsection 3, and section 55, subsection 2, paragraph B, to do oversight and also to scrutinize the work done by the executive. And for us to do that, we do that based on the report given to us. So if we don't have that report, we will scrutinize and do oversight based on what they are giving us. So next time when they come, they must bring a detailed report, and from that detailed report, for the purpose of a presentation, then they can make a summary to present. Because every time when they come here, what we get is the summary of presentation, and through this summary, we are not able to do proper oversight. Lastly, Chair, We asked many questions here based on Municipal Financial Management Act. Now, we are told of Section 106. But what we wanted was that under Section 32, subsection 4 of Municipal Financial Management Act, it is clear that section, it is saying the accounting officer must, the wording is must. report UIF to the MEC. And as part of that report, they must give, is there anyone who is responsible? And what are the steps taken? Now, why are we emphasizing on this? This is how politicians are involved in corruption. The management will be involved in corruption, and from there they will say, they will report to executive committee. Then the executive committee will not do any oversight and will not say anything about that corruption. It goes to council. Then it will be defended at council level. It will also go to, council must appoint a committee for oversight. There are those committees, Section 79 committees. There is also MPEC. Now, again, politicians sit on that matter, report back, and sometimes they scrap that UIF. Now, it is only when there are whistleblowers that we now get to know of this corruption. But those who made it possible are politicians who didn't do their oversight. So there is a relationship between service providers, management, and politicians. Service providers is to get 10. So that is what we wanted to know from this report, Chair, because you MEC will act on 106 based on what he got in terms of Section 32, subsection
4. Honorable Matumba, it's a follow-up. Please, can you conclude?
Chair, as part of conclusion, next time when they come to give us a report, they must tell us this matter, when it's found that there is a UIF, when they're getting it from AG, they must tell us, why didn't the municipality report this thing? And if they didn't report it, why was it not picked up by mechanisms that are supposed to pick up? And what are consequences management to those who didn't do oversight to pick up this UIF? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Teza.
No, thank you very much, Chair. One of the reasons why we're saying that these things of free, corrupt-free government will never happen outside the tendering system. It is because the municipality's dependence on external service providers continues to be based on the pretext that says that municipalities should not have capacity to deliver on their services, and it is all the time, Chair, the people that are suffering. This is why we are saying that one, being quality that is delivered as a result of tenders, quality is totally compromised. Number two, the question of inflated prices come as a result of tenders themselves. So the undertaking that you would have a free and transparent and free of corruption government outside the system of tenders is nowhere to be found, because if you go to chapter 11 of the MFMA, there in chapter 11 section 110 1c, there it promotes this thing, the selection of the contractors to provide assistance in the provision of the municipal services otherwise than the circumstances where chapter 8 of the Municipal Systems Act applies. The selection of the external mechanisms again. So you find you can go on to that thing. You go to supply chain management, section 112, supply chain management, section 111, and unsolicited bids, 114, 113, implementation. Those things are not encouraging that section that speaks about section 41 that speaks about capacity building, section 34 that speaks about capacity building, national and provincial, where it says national provincial government must by agreement assist municipalities in building the capacity of municipalities for efficient, effective and transparent financial management. So it's speaking here and try to fix there, whereas none of these things are existent. And then on section 2, national and provincial government must support the efforts of municipalities to identify and resolve the financial problems. Now, we are speaking financial problems and irregularities here. As a result of that system, while the MFMA legalistically promotes those things that are perpetuating corruption, and you find people that are recycled like that, even on section, what is that section of section 57A1 of the Systems Act, it does speak to how a person implicated will be will find on misconduct will be then have a particular a period that is set out to them be employed in another municipality. Really, Chair, some of these things will not see corrupt-free government. Thank you very much.
Chair, I note the response of MEC Jomo. It's fine. We are going to take it up after the department is ready. But, Chair, I just want to propose that since we are going to have KZN on floods, so I propose that if they can furnish us, all departments, with the outstanding reports in terms of the investigations that all departments are saying they are embarking on, if they just furnish us as a committee, we'll be very happy. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, I think we... yes, there were these follow-ups, but I think as we close the meeting, I'll allow the Premier to comment closing the meeting. If there's anything that might have been said out of the follow-ups, but I think what Honorable Mkhalipi is indicating is that where there are gaps in terms of information that have been asked, let's submit those reports. Can I allow the Premier to come in and also make your closing remarks?
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thanks to all members who have made their comments. I think, Honorable Chair, we welcome the suggestions and all input by members as a follow-up. Some of the things that is pointed by members themselves are out of our control, and we will all have to ensure that we work together to improve the systems. If one person is investigated and then jump the ship, but in the next period, you find that person in a particular sphere of government, in a different sphere of government, we should be able to have a system that will allow us to take actions. In this case, our systems are not yet permitting us to take any action if someone is out of the provincial government and goes to the local government. If it is between the department, it is clear you can take decision, you can still discipline that person. And we have been doing that. So I think it's our responsibility, it lies with all of us, to continue ensuring that the issue of reports, I can confirm, we will try to get all mentioned the report and the reports that are being investigated in the subsequent engagement. Thank you, Chair. We thank you for following up on issues we discussed last time when we met, and will always be available even in future. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Premier. Your cabinet and DG and the other HODs. Yes, on behalf of the committee, Edward should have indicated that we are all keen to get closer to KwaZulu-Natal because of the disaster. We have engaged with the Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, and I think the fear that lessons learned from COVID-19 should not repeat themselves. I think all of us, I think we must have learned some lessons from the past. And so we actually would like to indicate that I've just been able to interact with you are the third province. Maybe two members who indicated that they appreciate the presence of the Premier. It might be from previous experiences, but I can confirm in the last two that for now, you are the first one that we have interacted with. But let's keep up that good work, because premiers are the face of the executive at that level of the sphere of government. And we are the ones then who should ask those questions. But I think as well, we are noting, as we get inputs from yourselves, the gaps that might talk to some of the laws that have been passed by Parliament and as to what needs to be done, and possible without necessarily amending the laws, if people, for example, jump ship when they are being followed. Fortunately for us, we don't only engage the executive, even the institutions that are supposed to enforce the laws, whether it is NPA, the Hawks, SIU, and we're looking at both to see the impact of their work in dealing with issues of corruption. And so specifically, when we raise questions about consequences management, it has been identified as a weakness in terms of execution. So I'm sure as we talk to each other, each one is noting where can we improve. In other words, I would like to say thank you very much to everybody who has been part of the meeting. The information shared will also make us better in terms of doing what we are supposed to do, which is called oversight. And questions responded to as well are also helping us to understand governance better. And the beneficiaries in the end are those people that we represent as public representatives. The assumption is that some of the questions we raise, they also emanate from them. In other words, thank you very much for the time, and we appreciate it. See you next time. The committee meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, Peggy.
Bye-bye.
Long live the chair.
Long live.
Bye-bye, Peggy.
Thank you, Chair.
The votes upon the 3rd of June, the trial restarted today from the entirely dead judge, Rana Pumanala, State Police Record.